Right.
This is the February 13, 2024 Thurston County Land Use Hearing Calendar. Good morning. Thanks for joining us here on Zoom. I am hearing examiner Sharon Rice. I'm an attorney who works as hearing examiner on contract for Thurston County and about 12 other cities and counties, basically up and down the I-5 corridor. As the county's hearing examiner, I have jurisdiction to hear and to decide the project at 11 o'clock on today's agenda. Preliminary plat 13-112596 and forest land conversion file number 13-112598. This is the project known as the Oak Springs preliminary plat. As we go forward today, anyone who needs to get my attention, you can call me Examiner Rice or Ms. Rice. And if anybody has a request on how they should be addressed, please let us know when you testify. Today's virtual hearing is, of course, being recorded by Zoom. It is actually the audio recording that is a crucial part of the legal record being created in today's fact-finding hearing. I need everyone's help making sure audio is perfectly audible on the recording. Please help me by keeping your audio muted when you are not testifying and making sure your cell phones or other noise-making devices in your environment are as quiet as you can make them when you are testifying, so we don't have to ask you to repeat yourself. Of course, this is a virtual hearing, but it is a legal proceeding, and please remember that. The examiner's job includes running an efficient and civil proceeding. I want to remind folks, in the event we have any disruption, if it's inadvertent, I will first ask Miss Katie, my hearing clerk's assistance in muting people who are apparently inadvertently interfering with our audio. If we were to have any obviously or apparently intentional disruption, I would ask for her assistance in removing that person from the meeting. Just letting you know. I will be asking folks to testify one at a time, again, to make sure everything that is said is clear on the recording. When you first testify, please help us by doing the following ritual for the record. Please state and slowly spell your name. And then if you are a county staff or applicant agent, please give me your correct job title so that I can identify you properly in the findings. And then I will ask you to take an oath before you testify. If anyone gets ahead of me and we don't get through all that, I will interrupt you and ask you to do those things. So excuse me in advance for the interruption. The State of Washington Appearance of Fairness Doctrine applies to all land use hearings. And so for the record, I will make the following disclosures. Again, I work on contract for Thurston and approximately 12 other jurisdictions. I am not a county employee. I have not had conversations with anybody from the county, from the applicant, or the public regarding the merits of the proposal. And I don't have personal, familial, or any other interests anywhere near the subject property. Because those facts are true, I believe I'm capable of issuing an impartial decision in this application. Please understand, anyone who thinks they have grounds to challenge my impartiality is required to raise that challenge at their first opportunity, which would be in your testimony today if you are here and you think you do. An important land use tenet I try to communicate at every hearing. Please understand, permits are not decided by popularity or by consensus. The number of people for or against a project is not itself evidence. As the examiner, I'm charged with reviewing the documents and testimony that are offered and determining whether, on balance, the evidence succeeds in demonstrating compliance with the permit criteria for approval and the applicable development standards. In a record that fails to so demonstrate, the examiner has no authority to approve a permit. And in the case of a record that does succeed in making that demonstration, the examiner has no authority to deny a permit. So, all testimony at today's hearing will be relied on to the extent that it helps elucidate whether or not the project complies or can, with conditions, be made to comply with criteria for permit approval and the applicable development standards. Please remember that. In this, as in all land use applications, the burden of proof belongs to the applicant, and that term, in case anyone is unfamiliar, means that it's the applicant's job to provide that evidence that does succeed in demonstrating compliance. However, we're gonna stick with Thurston County ritual here today and hear from county staff first. So I will have a testimony first from county staff. I do have questions queued up for various departments of county staff. Then we'll hear from the applicant, and the applicant's presentation is their opportunity to supplement or challenge or simply just add to anything county staff has said, as well as answer any questions I still have in order to make sure the applicant is satisfied that everything that needs to be brought to my attention is and is in the record before we adjourn today. I do have questions queued up for the applicant too. At that point, I will call for public comment. When we're done with those two presentations, I will call for public comment, and I will ask Miss Katie to help me go through the folks in the meeting to find out if anybody would like to provide public comment. Preview, we will be asking you to use the raise your hand feature when we get there. There will be one public comment period, and each person will have one opportunity to provide any questions, concerns, or any comments they have about the proposal. After I have heard from all members of the public who wish to testify, we'll close the public comment period, and then I will go for responses in the reverse order, first from county staff, last from the applicant, because as the party with the burden, they get the last say in these proceedings. At that point, we tend to be done. There will be a housekeeping session at the end. We will address any additional documents that have been offered and admitted during the proceeding. We will address any other outstanding housekeeping issues. And you should know, I will be taking the matter under advisement. By county code, I have 10 business days to issue a decision on an application. And those 10 business days start at the close of the record. Please know I'm going to treat this application the same as all others, and I will be holding the record open briefly at the end of the hearing to allow for post-hearing public comment from folks who tried to participate but had technology problems. That is 2 business days, so it's a brief period. I understand this permit has some history, and any additional day sounds like a lot, but I'm going to treat this application like all others. I will hold the record open for 2 business days, and if we do receive timely post-hearing public comment from people who had technology problems and therefore could not participate today, staff and the applicant will be invited to respond in writing for the record. They will also have 2 business days to do that. This creates a schedule, a graduated schedule. So at the end of the hearing, we will go over that schedule. I will identify any outstanding documents. I'll give you the exact dates that post-hearing comment and responses are due, and the exact dates the decision will be due to be issued. We'll do that at the end, and I will email that schedule in writing to Miss Katie. She can forward it to the participants and also post it online, and that way everyone will know. As we go forward today, I do hereby deputize Sonia Katie to interrupt me at any point that I am clearly missing something that needs my attention. Please jump in, be loud. So that's it. I'm going to acknowledge the documents I received before the hearing so everyone knows what I had a chance to review or skim. Skim because something came in right before the hearing. That was substantive. Okay, so Exhibit 1, as always, thank you for that consistency. I received a staff report from the Community Planning and Economic Development Department to the hearing examiner. Attached to Exhibit 1 are attachments identified on the last page of the staff report as attachments A through DD. So that's A through Z and then AA through DD. Also, before today's hearing, an additional traffic study was submitted, and the clerk asked me where we should put it. It's a historic document, and so I advised her to please make it attachment EE, and I'm scrolling to let you know that is the Oak Springs traffic impact analysis dated November 2013. That is at attachment EE. Also, before today's hearing, that I received public comments 2A and 2B from Judy Fouch and Eric and Nicole Moe. At Exhibit 3, I received a Public Works recommendation. That document is dated 2024. Whew. At Exhibit 4, there is an Oak Springs speed study performed by Heath and Associates dated 2014. At Exhibit 5, there is a list of exhibits that the applicant offered to supplement the record. So 5 is the exhibit list. And then it identifies 25 documents. Those are identified now as exhibits 5.1 through 5.25. They are admitted. I had a chance to review almost everything in good detail from exhibit 5, as well as exhibit 1 Exhibits 1, 2, and 3, and 4. This morning, just before the hearing, I received Exhibit 6, which is the applicant's response to the staff report, and it has one appendix, which is applicant's proposed revisions to the conditions of approval. I had a chance to skim that and to quickly look at the attachment, revisions for the exhibits, but I really didn't get a chance to integrate that with my brain yet. So I'll be looking for the applicant to go through that in some detail in their presentation. In any case, those are the documents I received, and they are all admitted, exhibits 1 through 6. Anything else that comes in, we will number, and I will ask Miss Katie to help me track anything else that comes in. Yay, you're done listening to me. Let's hear from county staff. Can I please have the first county staff person who will testify? Role model for everyone, how we do. Please state and spell your name, give me your correct job title, and let me swear you in. Introduce yourself first, sir.
No, I was just waving, saying it's me, so I apologize. My name is Brett Burris. That's spelled B-R-E-T-T-B-U-R-E-S, and I'm the Development Services Manager for Community Planning and Economic Development.
Thank you, sir. I just want to let you know, your audio is just a little bit quiet. I don't know if you could be closer to your mic. I don't know if it's just me.
Well, let me talk a little louder then.
That works. That's better. Yes. Okay. If I could swear you in, please. Do you swear or affirm your testimony today will be true? If so, please say I do.
I do.
Mr. Burris, please go ahead.
Thank you very much. So a brief description of the project, and then a little discussion about hopefully the extended history of the project. So for the record, the project is proposing to subdivide 20.02 acres into 88 single family dwelling units. It is located off of Marvin Road and is within the Lacey Urban Growth Area with a zoning designation of low density, or LD. The project will also construct a stormwater track and associated pond with the southeastern portion of the site, and is providing 18% of open space totaling 3.60 acres. The project will require grading encroachments and building permits if the hearing examiner deems this project approved. Staff has reviewed the proposal. Let me rephrase, more than a few staff have reviewed this proposal over the years. And it appears that appropriate provisions have been made for consistent with RCW 5817110. And if the examiner deems the project to be approved, staff recommends recommended conditions of approval outlined on page 7 through 15 of Exhibit 1, as well as provided in Exhibit 3. And Exhibit 3 is the Public Works recommendations of approval. And knowing that you probably have some questions, I am available to answer any questions.
All right, let's start with nailing down the number of lots, because some of the materials still say up to 90. So I just want to confirm, is 88 a final number in your understanding, sir?
For my proposal, it is the final number. And if I may, I believe that an easement was created over the course of the last few months that might have removed a lot. But 88 is the total as shown on the site plan.
When we get to the applicant's presentation, they can address that issue of whether or not there has been a change, a reduction by one lot due to an easement or any other information related to that. Mr. Burris, from reviewing the staff report, I was confused. Happily, I got Exhibit 6 this morning. It provides a pretty thorough review of why we're talking about a 2013 plat application today. Do you have anything to add for the record regarding how the application from 2013 is still active and able to be considered for approval?
I have not had time to review Exhibit 6 as of yet, so I apologize for not being read up on that. But the applicant requested this project in 2013, and during the review, at that time, Marvin Road corridor concurrency issues were discovered. In short, there were not enough transportation trips along the corridor for the subject project. These events were outside of the applicant's control and largely unanticipated. And the county maintained active application to ensure a path forward towards the project to satisfy the code. This project, from my understanding, because concurrency was not available, and this might be a better question for Public Works, the project maintained its status throughout until concurrency had been met.
And its status was officially on hold, was its status?
It was, it's a great question. I don't know if I can answer it. We are going to deem it as being on hold. It was never expired. It was always maintained as active, from my perspective.
Okay. Well, according to the plat map in the record at Exhibit 1F, Exhibit 1 Attachment F, there's just a preliminary plat layout. It looks like the project is still proposing to take access via two connections to the Evergreen Heights plat to the north, and then also it looks like it's connecting to, is it the Oak Tree Preserve to the east, southeast?
I do not know the name of the plat.
Okay, the street on the plat map is Beaufort. What I was going to ask about that is, do we have any information to supplement my understanding with how far along both of those projects are? So I think Evergreen Heights is a fully improved, fully completed plat. Is that right?
I believe so.
Pardon me, sorry. And then in terms of that project to the southeast, Google Maps is telling me that the nearest portion of it is called Ovation at Oak Tree, or the Village Ovation at Oak Tree. Do we have any information about how far along that picture, that plat is? I'm looking at Google Maps and I don't even know when that photograph is taken, so.
I do not know how far along that plat.
Okay, I'm sure the applicant will have additional information on that point. A lot of these questions are probably questions that are best directed to the applicant and applicant's agents, but and so it's hard for me to determine which ones to ask of staff. So now I'd like some up-to-date information on the concurrency intersections that were at issue. I'm guessing that information might be from Mr. Saint and not from yourself, Mr. Burrs.
That's correct.
Burrs, so if we could have Mr. Saint introduce himself for the record and let me swear him in, please.
Thank you.
Yes, I'm Arthur Saint. That's ArthurSaint. I'm a civil engineer with the Thurston County Public Works Department.
Thank you very much, Mr. Saint. If I could swear you in, do you swear or affirm your testimony will be true? If so, please say I do.
I do.
Mr. Saint, can you give me an update on the intersections that were at issue in the concurrency?
Yes, there were four intersections, all Marvin Road, and then one was Mullen, one was 19th Avenue, one was 25th Avenue, and one was Union Mills.
Yes.
Of those, 25th was taken care of almost immediately with a minor county improvement. Marvin Road has been bonded for the improvements, so those are deemed funded and looked at as if they're complete because they're bonded. We have a bond in place to pay for those construction. If the development does not build them, and that bond is held for the Oak Tree subdivision. And then 19th and Union Mills are funded with county funds at this time, and they actually have gone out to bid for their construction.
Great. So their traffic review for the current proposal has been occurring or 10 years. And there are probably six documents, I didn't count them, in the record addressing various traffic studies over that time. My understanding is the most recent is the trip generation distribution study that was performed in August of 2022. So we have some numbers that are within a recent time frame, like a typical time frame.
Mm-hmm.
I'm confused about what traffic mitigation is applicable to this current proposal. The recommended condition 34 says comply with the mitigation identified in the traffic study. That's not helpful because of how many there are and they contain different information. So could you help me out?
Yes, the project needs to contribute impact fees to the city of Lacey, or traffic mitigation to the city of Lacey, and then they will contribute impact fees at the time of building permits for the lots on the in the subdivision.
So they're going to pay a lump sum to Lacey at some point?
They will be paying it per lot when they get water and sewer connection fees. I believe that's between the city and themselves. But the county allows for that.
We'll revisit that. I don't know if you've had a chance to look at Exhibit 6. In Exhibit 6, the applicant is proposing that we stick with the MDNS provision, which said lump sum of payment of fees to Lacey. And so
that would be up to the city. They typically don't do that, but the county has no objection to that either way.
Okay. And then they're also contributing impact fees, and that's going where? That's a separate impact fee payment.
That will be for traffic impact. There will be schools and parks mitigation, but I administer the transportation impact fees. That will go toward into the impact fee system to partially actually pay for improvements on Marvin Road, but other projects that are impacted within the county and need to be upgraded for growing traffic.
Great. So whatever the fee will be to Lacey, that fee, and then impact fees to Thurston County per trip. And there are no traffic improvements required as mitigation for the proposal?
Nothing offsite, no.
Okay. And looking at the 2014, it's mostly the comments were from 2014. They're attached to the staff report at, I think it's Exhibit A, AA. And a lot of those folks were at the time very concerned about the proposed number of trips coming through their plat to access Marvin Road. And a lot of them specifically reference the intersection of Wood Ridge with Marvin and also the intersection of 28th Way Southeast with Wood Ridge. Do you have any comments on adequacy of those intersections in terms of serving the proposed plat?
We did not find any specific issues with any of those intersections and did not look for any mitigation to them.
All right. There is a condition, and I didn't note which one it is, in one of the traffic studies that said, if WashDOT weighs in regarding Marvin and Pacific and says that additional mitigation is required at Marvin and Pacific, then the applicant should be required to contribute any update about WashDOT from WashDOT on that intersection?
They did not request any mitigation.
And were they recently invited to consider it, or do you know how long ago WashDOT was asked to consider it?
I would imagine they would have been routed the materials, but I don't personally know.
Routed the materials between 2013 and now, or in a recent time frame?
I would imagine they would have been routed the recent submittals. I don't do the routing, so I don't know for sure.
Thank you for that clarification. And you said regarding... Union Mills and Marvin, that one is funded and has gone out to bid.
Yes.
Thank you. I had a couple of other questions about conditions that I think might be public works related. So I'm going to look at the staff report version of the exhibits. I was confused. These, I guess, are in no particular order. Sorry about that. Looking at recommended condition 56, so that's towards the end. It's the third from the last condition in the staff report. It's requiring a bill of sale for water and sewer improvements being installed with the project.
That would be a city condition.
Okay, so those conditions are all City of Lacey. And
yes, county, I did not, I didn't, yeah, I didn't get my conditions in time to make it into the staff report.
Got it. So that you don't have any explanation for me on that condition.
No, I'm sure it's pretty typical though, for the county has utilities and we always get a bill of sale for those okay. improvements made that are added to our system.
Thank you. One second. So those is 52 also a City of Lacey condition, 20% maintenance bond or financial guarantee?
I'm sure it is, yes.
Okay. All right.
I can testify that we do something very similar for improvements within county right of way. So I'm sure they do it for the same reason.
Thank you. One more, hold on. can you talk to me about recommended condition 28? It's in bold, specific stormwater improvements. And it's obviously a city condition. It mm-hmm. says the city defers to Thurston County for review, approval and construction of stormwater elements.
Yes.
Can you give me some context for this?
Certainly. The city has, because this is within county jurisdiction for now and will be maintained by the county until annexed, the city does all of the review for stormwater, or the county does all the review for the stormwater and the city defers to us on stormwater issues.
Okay. And the applicant notes in their materials, stormwater is one area to which a project cannot vest. So the project is required to comply with current stormwater regulations. Is that right?
I believe so, yes.
Can you provide just some testimony discussing stormwater generally for this project at a high level?
The soils infiltrate fairly well in this area. So I believe it is infiltration ponds with treatment, bioretention soil treatment. I did not review the stormwater personally. I'm sure the engineer of the project would have a much more detailed analysis.
All right.
But it's the soils, I do know the soils drain fairly well in this area. So I'm sure it's all infiltrating on site per our standards.
Great. Thanks for that. I think that might be it for you, Mr. Saint, because I think the other conditions are probably environmental health related.
You did ask about the access.
Please.
I can speak to that.
Please.
Balthorpe is within the Oak Tree subdivision, and it is constructed at this time.
Is and that the Oak Tree Preserve plat?
Yeah. Yep. Thank Oak you. Tree Preserve. Yeah.
And so there are two routes out to the main road then through two different plats.
Three. There's two to the north through Evergreen Heights, which is has been constructed for quite a while, and the newly constructed Balthorpe access.
Okay.
And they're making one stub to an adjacent parcel that's basically undeveloped at this time for future development of that lot.
And that is the private road tract at the end of the lower cul-de-sac?
Yes, it's in between lots 62 and 61.
Okay. There it is. Got it. Okay. Great. Anything else, Mr. Saint?
Not at this time.
Thank you very much. I could hear from environmental health. I had some questions. Could you introduce yourself?
Good morning, Dawn Peebles. That's DawnPeebles. I'm an Environmental Health Program Manager with Public Health and Social Services, Environmental Health Division.
Thank you very much. Do you swear or affirm your testimony will be true? If so, please say I do.
I do.
Thank you. Ms. Peebles, background context statement for this project?
Environmental Health did review the project for compliance with the Sanitary Code and associated policies. Our letter of recommendation of approval is included at attachment R. We had five identified conditions of approval, which are also included in the staff report on page 8 and 9.
Thank you. So I have this noted as a question for you, but it says right there, this is a public works condition. So I don't know which of you wants to address this, but I'm looking at recommended condition 10. I'm just curious, this is talking about the water main extension and requiring individual pressure reducing valves. And I don't know who it is to answer that, but my question is who decides when those may be required? And when is it decided?
So I'm presuming this is a City of Lacey requirement, and I see Mr. Saint is nodding his head yes. Yeah. I'm unable to speak to the specifics regarding it.
Just curious. I guess it makes sense that I'm unfamiliar with it since it's a city standard condition and not county standard condition. Ms. Peebles, is there any question about water availability to serve this project? My question is generated by condition 18, which addresses something about water availability. Is this just for fire flow is my question really?
I had not read this specific condition, but that is how I'm interpreting it in regards to fire flow modeling.
All right. Do you know, is there an issue with water supply for domestic water connections for these proposed lots?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Okay. And is there any question about sewer capacity in your minds, Ms. Peebles?
No. Okay. I believe the city did provide comment. I'm looking at the exhibits to find the most recent one, or if there was a recent one. But essentially, the city has identified that water and sewer are available to serve the project, and that is one of Environmental Health's final conditions, is that water and sewer must be extended throughout the subdivision and construction approval received from the city before this project could receive final subdivision approval.
All right. Anything else that you think I would want you to bring to my attention?
Not at this time.
All right. Thanks for being here. I had some questions queued up for planning regarding the ages of the Gopher determination and the White Oak determination, but I happened to take a look at Exhibit 6 when it arrived, and I see that the applicant has spoken to that. So rather than ask staff to address those, I think I'll hear from the applicants on these points, and then if I need confirmation of the department's agreement or any clarification, I'll go back to staff to ask questions after. Anything else that any county staff member wants to bring to my attention at this time? All right, thank you very much. I think the applicants are the holders of most of the detailed information here, and so let's go ahead and hear from applicant representatives. I don't know who will speak first for the applicant.
Thanks, Examiner Rice. This is Heather Burgess with Dixon Froelich Phillips Burgess. I'm the applicant's counsel on this particular application. Just for clarity, I do have Chris Pierce Wright from my team also on the call, but I'll be doing the primary speaking here today on behalf of the applicant.
Great.
I'm joined, just so you know who we have available and who plan to call to testify in support of the application. I'm joined by Mark Conwell, who's the owner of Conwell Investments LLC, who's the underlying applicant for this project. I also have Steve Hatton with Hatton Godat Pantier, who is the civil engineer of record. I have Aaron Van Aken from Heath and Associates Traffic Engineering. And then we have Stephen Quarterman from Landau and Associates, who prepared the final Oak Habitat Mitigation Plan in accordance with the county requirements. So I have all of those consultants and team available to you. I do plan to call them to address specific issues, but in the event that the examiner has specific questions, especially given kind of the, let's call it the age of the application, you know, we're certainly happy to take those. I think I might ask the examiner to take the somewhat unusual step of swearing me in.
Sure.
Simply because I have provided substantive information from my files and materials over my almost 9 years working on this project that I want to make sure can be given the appropriate evidentiary weight.
Let's do that, Ms. Burgess. If you'd raise your right hand, do you swear or affirm the testimony that you give in this proceeding will be true? If so, please say, I do.
I do. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I think it might be helpful if you'd indulge me for a moment, Examiner Rice, just to, especially for the benefit of county staff who received it late. And I do apologize. We worked as quickly as we could once we received the staff report last week to compile information that we thought would be necessary for the examiner to have a complete record of this highly unusual application. I have never had an application pending 3,770 days. I hope never to experience that again. It's highly unusual. And so it took us a little bit to get that information together and presented and call through what was necessary as opposed to what might have just been informational so as not to overload the record unnecessarily. But I thought I would just want to give a little overview of what is covered in Exhibit 6 to start with, to set the stage, and then we'll go through the applicant's testimony if that's okay with the examiner.
That sounds just right. Thank you.
Okay, great. So I did send this concurrently to county staff at the same time as I sent it to Ms. Katie. I did yesterday provide an advanced copy of our proposed revised conditions of approval. So they had those a little bit ahead of time, but not really a lot. And so, of course, we do understand that the county staff may need time to review and review those materials. And of course, the applicant's willing to provide a reasonable amount of time for response following the hearing. But of course, we'd like to truncate that as much as possible, given the longevity of this particular application.
Yes.
So specifically, the Exhibit 6 begins by giving you, I think, some fairly intentionally detailed information about how this project came to land in it. I'm going to call it a hold. I use hold in air quotes, as Mr. Burris kind of suggested in his testimony. There's not really a great record of project status from the county's records in terms of how it was classified within the county's own computer system. However, the initial communication that came in indicating a problem with transportation concurrency, which occurred on April 16th, 2015, included a memorandum that explained that in the event that the projects that were subject to this concurrency problem were going to be placed on hold until the county secured funding for the intersection improvements. There was a note that this did not stop any expiration clocks from other departments and that the applicant would need to talk to those departments directly regarding their expiration, which is the purpose of the rest of the narrative in that section of Exhibit 6 to explain all the efforts that the applicant did make during the pendency of the concurrency issue in order to keep its application alive. So the applicant here, the first section of Exhibit 6 goes into the kind of extensive history of first the notification of the concurrency determination, you know, issue. Then the second communication that came on June 29th of 2015, which is Exhibit 5.12, which is the memo from Public Works, which we call the concurrency white paper. The county also called it the concurrency white paper at the time, which set up I'm going to generously call it ad hoc system by which fees were assessed so that applicants with impacts to the identified intersections could voluntarily, again, using air quotes, pay a fee to purchase reserve capacity to allow their project to go forward. And this fee was separate from and in addition to any SEPA mitigation, which the examiner already discussed, as well as any impact fees. And I just to clarify, the examiner had pointed out question about the number of lots. It is 88 lots. And I'll give you an errata to my math after the hearing because I calculated my impact fees in here based on 89 lots. But at the time, the traffic impact analysis identified 89 p.m. peak hour trips. So at a minimum for the applicant to participate in this voluntary program would have been $1,425,000. The applicant declined to do that. The applicant also declined to spend the estimated $6,200,000 it would have been required to improve the necessary roundabouts to construct the project, and so began to engage in a multi-year process attempting to find a solution that involved the retention of two separate traffic engineering firms over the course of 5 years, multiple meetings with the county, multiple inquiries about the status of concurrency to continue tracking, which finally concluded on February 17th of 2022, when the county's Public Works Department issued a final determination that concurrency had been met for all the reasons Mr. Saint testified to, plus some additional ones that are in attachment P to the staff report, and determined that payment of the voluntary fee was no longer required. So at that point, the applicant proceeded to try to move the project off of hold, which was challenging. And so the communications related to trying to get the project off of hold and back into the system are also included in the materials discussed in Exhibit 6 and the related exhibits. There was many factors. We had a pandemic. There was significant county staff turnover. There was challenges in essentially resurrecting a long, you know, an 89-lot plat application from permit suspended animation or whatever status it was in, and trying to get those materials updated to the extent necessary and move it forward. So that kind of culminated to getting to today's hearing. So that's really, there's a lot of procedural history in Exhibit 6. That's the general overview, but wanted to make sure that the record was complete in terms of the application being placed on hold, our vesting being retained, and how we got to the public hearing in the current state we are today. So that's the first section of Exhibit 6.
Can I ask a question there, Ms. Bridges? Mm-hmm. On that point, is there, to your knowledge, to the applicant's knowledge, is there anybody challenging the vesting at this point?
Not to my knowledge.
I didn't see any either, but I'm asking because I didn't see it, and I don't know if I'm missing something.
I haven't seen any comments to that effect, Examiner Rice, but because of the age of the application, we thought it was important to make sure that that was clarified.
I appreciate it. And I really appreciate both exhibits 5 and 6 because I was confused without them. So thanks.
No problem. So just generally, so for the purpose of the county staff and for the record, what else is covered? We addressed kind of the specific history of the oak habitat review and the documents that comprise it. Go into a little bit more detail than the staff report, although it is covered. Regarding the WDFW process that was in place at the time this application was received and the approval that was received in the final plan. We also addressed the traffic history of the project. I think the hearing examiner noted in questioning Mr. Saint about kind of what traffic documents were required, and there's the explanation there about the new trip generation assessment from the city of Lacey that was required. We also addressed school impacts and safe walking routes in there. We don't have any comments from North Thurston, but there are school impact fees to be paid. And there is this currently a safe walking route, and we've included a photo of the crosswalk that's available at Marvin to get to the local elementary school. We went through Mazama Pocket Gopher and Habitat Conservation Plan. Compliance, this project is exempt pursuant to County Code 1740-020-E1A because it complied with the protocols in place. And I would note that the applicant performed two additional voluntary gopher studies in addition to receiving two separate good-to-go letters from U.S. Fish and Wildlife, which are included and attached as exhibits. No gopher habitat was identified. And just when you look at those exhibits, examiner rights, you'll see that they also included prairie plant and habitat review. So that aspect of the critical area ordinance was also covered. The exhibit goes on to address responses to public comments that largely have to do with street access. And then we've attached some revised suggested conditions of approval that Mr. Hatton will address as to the step system and the drainage manual and a couple others that I believe the examiner already noted.
Great.
So just for clarity of the record, those are the subjects that are covered in Exhibit 6.
Appreciate it.
Okay. So with that, I would like to, one more thing that I'd like to clarify is, and Mr. Hatton may speak to this, there's Exhibit 5.24 is an updated phasing plan for the project, which reflects the most current lot layout. So it's a revised plat map. That one Great. Reflects the easement that was discussed, as well as the final total of 88 versus 89 lots. So that should be the map that's referenced regarding the decision.
Great. Exhibit 5.24 is the accurate plat map.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Okay. So with that, what I'd like to do first is call Mr. Mark Conwell.
If you would unmute, sir, and then state and spell your name for the record and let me swear you in. You need to unmute first. There's a microphone you gotta tap on. There you go.
I'm there. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay. State my name, Mark Conwell, MarkConwell. I'm the owner applicant of the project.
Sir, if I could ask you to raise your right hand to take the oath. Do you swear or affirm that your testimony will be true? If so, please say, I do.
I do.
Mr. Conwell, thank you very much. Ms. Burgess? Did you have questions, or is he going to just provide testimony?
He's just going to provide some narrative, introductory testimony. Go right ahead.
Okay. I started this project in 2013. We turned it into the county. The project was going along, as Heather covered, it was going along. And in 2015, we received the white paper stopping the project, put it on hold. I wanted to add a little bit to Heather's as far as our efforts to keep the project moving forward. Since that time, I've spent a little over $139,000 on traffic studies and attorney fees and untold amount of time and efforts with the county to try to come to a solution to get the project moving forward. And so I kind of want to add that to the record and any questions you may have. That's kind of where we're at today and how we ended up here, and I'm seeking approval of the project.
Great. Thank you for being here. There may be other questions that only you can answer, so it's great you're here.
Okay.
Thanks, Examiner Rice. We'd next like to call Steve Hatton with Hatton Godat Pantier.
Good morning, all. Steve Hatton, STEVEHATTON. I'm a principal at Hatton Godat Pantier, engineering surveying firm that's been here in town for a long time.
That's great. Mr. Hatton, can I swear you in?
I suppose.
Thank you. Do you swear or affirm your testimony will be true? If so, please say, I do.
I do.
Go right ahead.
I've spent the better part of 30 years here in town working on projects similar to Mr. Conwell's, including the Evergreen Heights plat to the north and the infamous Oak Tree plat to the east that put such a crimp in the traffic out there. To your question earlier, Ms. Examiner, how far along is Oak Tree? Oak Tree is proposed for 8 phases. They have completed and final platted 4 of those. Exhibit 5 would have been A21, I think.
Okay.
Is kind of a, it's a Thurston County geodata aerial that has a little bit, it's pretty accurate. It's got the platted division 4, which is up on the northeast corner that borders the McAllister Park plat. So that there's a lot of dirt out there, but all around the 28th Avenue, that's Division 3, those homes are being built. There are homes on Beaufort, which is that road that you referenced earlier, coming off the east side of this plat. Under the arc is the clubhouse, 2 building, quite elaborate clubhouse for that project. And so at any rate, although it's Division 4, Yeah, it might be halfway, but it might be a little over half in terms of lot count. And then, yes, as you also noted, Evergreen Heights is a long done project. I think we worked on that almost 20 years ago. But so I have been involved with this project pretty much from the get-go. I met with Mr. Conwell out there on site in 2013 for the first time, and we've been here all along. We both do the surveying to lay out the plat, the topographic map for the property, and the preliminary engineering that is. Those plans are included in Exhibit G that were submitted for the project. Just to close the book, maybe on some of the questions you raised,
Sure.
the bill of sale and the maintenance bond, conditions 52 and 50, well, 56 and 52, respectively. Yeah, those are standard City of Lacey comments. Of course, the bill of sale, when we build water mains and sanitary sewer mains, they're turned over to the city, so the bill of sale just officially acknowledges that though Mark paid for them, they now belong to the city. And the maintenance bond is a 2-year commitment to ensure that if there's anything that went wrong with that installation for the first 2 years, that it'll get fixed, or the city has a bond to make sure that it gets fixed. The condition 10 apparently references PRV requirements. There are about three different pressure zones out in this area that serve different things. And what happens is if a low part of the property, which is on a pressure zone, might get close to 80 pounds of pressure, then the PRV is required. Otherwise, hot water heaters tend to open up. So that's city just noting that in this area, depending on where we're at and how the homes are built, may require PRV, fairly standard practice. Their water modeling comment is another template item. The city does their own modeling, and as we've extended mains south, stubbed out from Evergreen Heights, and west, stubbed out from Oak Tree, the mains required on this site have already been pretty fully vetted. Sewer capacity is a let me get to that one later. There's a little bit of confusion out there, and also things have changed over the last 10 years. So I'll come back to that one. Exhibit 524, which Ms. Burgess, excuse me, Burgess just referenced, is the same as that attachment F of the staff report. It's an updated plan that was responsive to a SEPA appeal about the neighbor to the west that needed water and sewer, and it tweaked the phasing lines around a little bit too. And I'll get to that more in a minute.
Okay.
Generally speaking, I've read all the conditions, and we're fine with those. I don't see any issues about that. We got just maybe three or four bookkeeping elements. So in terms of open space, yes, there's 3.6 or 3.59, depending on how you round, acres of open space. But a close read of the code will indicate that critical areas themselves only count for half of that in terms of meeting the requirement. So the project is required 10% or 2 acres of open space. And right, although it has 3.6, when you net out the portion that's wildlife habitat corridor. I forget exactly. Yeah, habitat corridor, we call it. And the oak trees, it comes down to about 3%. So 15%. Well over 10, not quite the 18. The open space is to include some mix of both active and passive recreation. We've got some picnic tables shown around the southwesterly cul-de-sac. There's also access to the open space from the northwesterly cul-de-sac. And so, and there's some indications in the wildlife or and habitat about some fencing and whatnot and signage and educational stuff. So those places will be open to the residents. And the stormwater track too will have it's accessible. There's a 6-foot berm that will go around it, and so there'll be both walking and just a bench or two to kind of observe the area. So both active and passive activities are there. We talked a little bit earlier, or you all did, about the drainage, which was submitted in 2013. That's the report is attachment H, and it was that report is reflects the 2009 drainage standards. We've had two changes since then, 2016, and again in 2022. Of course, I've worked with all of those manuals, and I will say that, well, let me back up. I've been working with drainage manuals since 1990, and there have been several since then. Some have dramatic changes, but really in about 2009, that was the last dramatic change. 16 and 22, they change a little bit about how we document, how we report, maybe a little bit about how we study, but materially, the size of ponds, the type of ponds, the type of water quality measures really hasn't changed at all. So I'm quite comfortable in saying that although the report says it's the 2009, those ponds in it under 22 standard will look about the same. So there'd be some subtle stuff. They started getting a whole lot more restrictive about groundwater monitoring, which in I think 2016. Mr. Conwell has conducted some groundwater studying, so we have that. So it's really pretty minimal, the impact, frankly. Even though 22 to 2013 or 2009 for that matter, looks like a long time. It, in terms of stormwater design, it hasn't changed that much. So getting back to that attachment F or exhibit 524, which is the current proposed preliminary plat and phasing plan, attachment G has all of the original preliminary design that went in, including the plat. And it's largely the same, although it went from 90 lots down to 88 due to fiddling with that southwest corner to resolve the SEPA appeal. So I point that out only to not to be avoid any confusion when we look between F and G and see that they don't look quite the same. G is old, but it's largely there. The engineering in those roads looks exactly the same. It's just the detail of that southwest corner is a little bit different. The phasing is well, it's different in two ways, slightly different in just in terms of which lots are included in which phase. But we've also added actually a fourth phase. I think the original only had three. Not a big deal there, but just a preference more than anything else. I promised to come back to the question of sewer capacity. And again, this is where time, I suppose, in this case, heals all wounds. The original design called to put, this is a step sewer location. Step means that there's a tank on each lot with a pump, and it goes into a small diameter pipe and pumps into the city system. Evergreen Heights was the nearest available sewer in 2013, and it has a little bit of a similar but different system of step. So what this plat had to do was extend a 4-inch step main about 400 feet into the plat of Evergreen Heights and connect to some pumping equipment, and then make sure the pumps that were there worked. We conducted a study, and its attachment, I should know that, J. So attachment J in the staff report sort of dives into the engineering weeds about how big the pump should be and what has to be done. And that's all well and good. And it, in my opinion, works just fine. What the city and condition 21 says is, well, that's good, but at the time of permit, look at it again and make sure it still works, which is fine in and of itself, except that when Oak Division 2 went in and Beaufort was constructed and stubbed to the southeast side of this plat, they brought a 6-inch step main that direction. And so now there actually are two alternatives: go to the north, go to the south. And the question about sewer capacity has essentially been eliminated. And I think that's it. Yeah, that's all I had, but happy to answer questions.
Ms. Rice?
Yes.
I just wanted to add one thing as far as the lot count to clarify that. The lot count has been 88 since 2014 when Public Works required us to add a road stub to the south, and then we reduced it to 88 from 89. So there's been no lot count change since that point, just so that's clarified.
Great.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, Mark. I'd forgotten about that one.
Yep, no problem. It's been a long time.
So, Mr. Hatton, all of these Lacey conditions are a little bit unfamiliar to me. And can you just confirm so they're unfamiliar, so I don't know by whom and when these things all have to be completed. I'm not familiar with how the city normally handles that. So is it true that if approved and these City of Lacey conditions that are recommended in the staff report are imposed, then the City of Lacey officials will be reviewing construction at the appropriate times to make sure these conditions are satisfied?
Yes. I will say this to start with, regardless of this either adopted or not in the staff report, the City of Lacey, in order to turn the water faucet on, will insist on them. So the PRV is almost more of a heads up than anything else, because usually PRVs go on individual services and as a building permit thing later on, but not always. So they put it out there. What was it? Bill of sale and the maintenance bond are required by the city is required to have those before they'll sign off and allow Thurston County Environmental Health to approve the plat.
Got it.
So yes, and the sewer permit won't be issued until either condition 21 is completed or irrelevant.
Got it. And then for the water modeling that at condition 18, that's for fire flow only.
Generally speaking, yes. And that would also be a condition of permit approval by Lacey.
On a lot per lot basis?
No, they would do that modeling if they think they still need to before they'll issue a construction permit.
Got it. All right, there were, Mr. Hatton, were you going to present testimony about the request of revisions to the recommended conditions?
No, I read Ms. Burgess' memo and her suggested condition revisions, and I think they are appropriate.
Okay. Okay. I think that the information called to my attention in Exhibit 6 and in Exhibit 5 answers the questions that I had regarding the adequacy and applicability of all the gopher studies and the white oak determinations. And the fact that the project is vested to its previous screening and does not require compliance with the county's recently adopted HCP. I don't think I have questions about any of that. Are there, besides Oak Tree Preserve, were there other large residential developments in the vicinity that have come up after this application was submitted?
Yeah, undoubtedly. The Marvin Road corridor affected everyone from Pacific all the way to Mullen. So yeah, there have been others. I think most of them had much smaller purchasing requirements. Some bought that 30K a lot type of thing.
Yeah.
Or commercial sites that paid money on that sort of thing. I don't know about any other large, super large plats, but.
Okay. I have this one sort of academic question about the traffic studies. The project vested to the regulations in effect in 2013, but you've determined that under the current county regulations, only a trip generation and distribution study is required rather than the full traffic study. I'm curious about that. That seems to be out of order with the vesting.
Sure. I do have Aaron Van Aken, the traffic engineer, who can speak to some of that. So I was planning to call him next.
Great.
If that's okay.
That's perfect.
Before we get to Aaron,
sure.
Though,
sure.
I mean, you know, part of the challenge here is, yeah, we're vested to whatever the standards were in 2013, but then we had this intervening multi-year concurrency morass. Right. And so if you look at the TIA from 2013, considerable amount of discussion had to do with the Marvin Road corridor, which at that point became obsolete because it had been resolved through the concurrency issue. The other traffic studies you see in the record, I explained what their purpose was in Exhibit 6. Those were trying to find ways through the concurrency, which were unsuccessful. So there's a couple intervening traffic studies that were intended to be responsive to the concurrency white paper. So then when we fast forward to 2022, we have a concurrency situation that is completely different from when the original traffic study was done. We have a project that's in the Lacey urban growth area under Lacey's purview, according to their interlocal agreement with the city, and I'm sure, or with the county, that I'm sure Mr. Saint could speak to if needed. And at that point, you know, question is, what do we have to do to update traffic to get this project to hearing? When that was posed to the city, they asked for what you see as the exhibit. So Mr. Van Aken prepared that document and can speak to what it does or does not do. But I just wanted, by way of context, I think we were vested to the old standards, but I also think there was significantly enough changed circumstances that the old report no longer contained adequate information upon which a decision could be based.
Got it. Got it. And so then current documentation was prepared under current standards instead of old standards.
That's and taking into account the concurrency determination that had been reached by the county in 2022.
Great.
So I'd like to call Mr. Van Aken, if that's okay. Before I do that, though, Mr. Hatton testified about the STEP system and the adjacent oak tree preserve development.
Yes.
And I just wanted to point out that Exhibit 5.22 shows the as-built for that. Mr. Hatton provided that to me to put into the record so we could show the availability of the alternate connection in support of our request for revision to Condition 21.
Can I point out something? I just wanted to point out in the 2013 traffic study, the intersections that were required to be reviewed for that study are all the intersections that are in the Marvin Road corridor or the white paper. There were no intersections at that time that we would have had to been applied in the new model. So nothing had changed as far as the required intersections that now meet concurrency. So we're not bypassing any intersection that might have been on the 2013 traffic report, just for the record.
Great. No, that's okay. Fine to point out. Thank you. Mr. Van Aken, let's have you introduce yourself for the record.
Yes, my name is Aaron Van Aken, A-A-R-O-N, last name Van Aken, V-A-N, space A-K-E-N, and I'm a licensed engineer with Heath & Associates Traffic Engineering, and we prepared the original 2013 report among a couple of subsequent iterations.
Great. Let me swear you in, Mr. Van Aken. Do you swear or affirm your testimony will be true? If so, please say I do.
I do.
Thank you. And please go ahead.
Yes. So this project has a long history with multiple traffic analyses conducted over the years. And while not the original engineer of record, I did author the latest assessment update dated August 2nd, 2022. So that comprised just a trip generation and distribution update, as that was all that was deemed necessary under current code, and that was all scoped out with Public Works. So I reviewed most of the prior traffic studies and wanted to bring discussion to the speed study that I believe is Exhibit 4. That was conducted in 2014 due to neighborhood concerns. And while around 10 years old now, I don't see any material changes that in the Evergreen Heights development that would lead me to believe that the results would differ today. So a total of 8 locations were sampled throughout the neighborhood. And it was found that the 85th percentile speeds range between 18 to 27 miles per hour. And that's within tolerable ranges for a posted speed of 25 miles per hour. So there was no speeding concerns that were identified as a result of that speed study. And then the trip distribution assessment that we conducted assigned all traffic through the Evergreen Heights development to the north. And this was primarily based on the Thurston Regional Planning Council modeling that we have to use in this area as the basis of the trip distribution. And that modeling did not have the connection to the east through the Oak Tree Preserve built in at the time. And so it doesn't show any traffic would utilize that connection. You know, however, some traffic could use that, especially, you know, drivers wanting to head to or from the south that could go to Oakwood and use the roundabout. So the traffic that's purported to go through the neighborhood to the north may actually be lower. And Yeah, and then with the Marvin Road concurrency corridor improvements being funded, the county determined that payment of traffic impact fees is the proportional mitigation to the Oak Springs development, which we concur with. And that concludes what I have, and I am available for any questions.
All right, thanks for going through that. So in preparing the 22 update, you looked at everything before. Thank you for bringing the speed study up. The public comment was really concerned about those two intersections. Did you have anything you can add regarding congestion or impacts to the intersections at 28th and Woodridge and Woodridge and Marvin?
Based on the original traffic study, granted that was a long time ago, the intersection of Marvin and Woodgrove operated, I believe it was LOSB, with the full build conditions with the project. That was not an alarming concern. The LOS standard is D in this area. And so without current information, I can't speak to what it would operate today, but just given the capacity available 10 years ago, where the other intersections that were operating between D and F are now all being funded with improvements. So, you know, I can't speak with certainty that the intersection is still within standards, but I would posit that it is just based on the previous information that was conducted.
And contributing to the to those operations being effective is the fact that there's now a secondary egress route through a different plat as well.
Well, the original traffic study did not assume that. So to sign all traffic through that intersection in which it still maintained acceptable operations. So the delay would further be reduced by disseminating traffic further east and south.
Right, thank you. I don't have any other specific questions on traffic. Thank you though for your testimony.
Yes, thanks.
Ms. Burgess, did you have any other witnesses that you'd like to present testimony from?
I do briefly, and just before I'm going to last witness is Mr. Quarterman, who we're going to call, who is the biologist who prepared the final habitat management plan. But before we get to that, I just wanted to call the examiner's attention to attachment M, and I apologize if you can hear barking dogs. I've really done all I can to insulate myself from that at the current moment. Attachment M is a traffic impact analysis scoping and the scoping requirements originally from 2013. Yeah. And if you look at that list of intersections, the two that were expressed areas of community concern were not listed, nor were they required when we went back in 2022. So the original TIA did look at some intersections, but those were not required to be specifically studied.
Got it. Oh, actually, the one of the two that I was thinking was of primary concern was Marvin and Woodgrove. Right. It is on the scoping.
So, right. Marvin and Woodgrove, yes, is, but the other 28th is not. Yes.
Great.
Oops. And with that, I'd like to call Mr. Quarterman.
Great.
Stephen Quarterman, STEVEN. Quarterman, Quarterman.
Thank you, sir. And remind me your credentials. Your
senior associate with Landau Associates.
Landau. Thank you very much. If I can swear you in. Do you swear or affirm that your testimony will be true? If so, please say I do.
I do.
Thank you. Mr. Quarterman, thank you for providing updated information. Can you run through it for us?
Sure, yeah. So Landau Associates provided the initial oak habitat assessment back in 2013 and 2015, attachments S and attachment Z in the record. I was not the biologist of record that prepared those at that time. However, I did rely on those documents to prepare the habitat management plan, which is attachment Y.
And Examiner Rice, I wanted to call Mr. Quarterman mainly at this point, unless you had questions about the actual HMP itself. to address a public comment that came in at Exhibit 2B about impacts to owl habitat. So I'd like Mr. Quarterman to speak to that public comment.
Thank you.
Sure. So the commenter, you know, was not specific on specific owl species, but obviously it's related to forested habitat. And so with our mitigation plan, we are retaining and enhancing some of the forested habitat on site, including creating and retaining snags, which could provide nesting habitat for certain owl species, and also providing habitat improvements for prey species, things such as habitat piles, which provide cover for small mammals and songbirds, which are, you know, are prey for some owl species.
Thank you.
That's what I'd wanted Mr. Quarterman to address. If the examiner had any specific questions about the HMP, I think the history and supporting documents and process by which it was created are outlined in some detail in Exhibit 6. But if there was questions about the plan itself, Mr. Quarterman can answer at least for the one that he prepared that's in the record.
So I didn't have a chance to read Exhibit 6 that closely. There is some discussion of impacts to oaks. I believe it was not going to be in Tract B. It was going to be in Tract A that were unable to be avoided. I'm sorry. I don't have a specific question, really. I will read through the documents and get straight on that myself. I don't know if Mr. Quarterman, if you want to provide any sort of overview testimony about what's proposed for mitigation or habitat management.
Yeah, so there are unavoidable impacts to the oak habitat, and for the mitigation, as I mentioned, we are retaining some of the forested habitat, and through the assessment, they are essentially degraded oak habitat. The oak trees that are there have competition from other tree species and understory vegetation, maybe like Scotch broom invasive species. And so as part of the plan, we are essentially kind of quote unquote releasing the oak habitat by select removing of the non-oak tree species, retaining some, again, as these snags to provide habitat. Snag is essentially a dead tree, and or incorporating as downed large wood for habitat. And then we are providing a open space tract that is also going to provide or be provided with plantings. And so in that planting plan, we've incorporated oak to provide some oak habitat that is being lost as part of the project.
Great. And it looks like just tracts A and B are going to contain oak habitat when we're done?
Yes, there's kind of two areas in Tract A, if I'm looking at the map correctly. There's to the south, there's a on the south edge of the property that are on Tract A, there's existing oak habitat, and then just kind of to the north before crossing the access road, there's a individual oak tree that we are retaining as well.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Quarterman. I don't have any specific questions. I think with the help that I've had so far, I'll be able to make sense out of everything that's in the previous plans. So thank you.
And Examiner Rice, I just wanted to point out too, one of our proposed additional conditions addresses compliance with the requirements of the habitat management plan. I'm certainly open to and welcome the planning department's wordsmithing assistance in ensuring that is compliant and consistent with other similar conditions imposed on plats. I made that up.
Yeah.
Just to make sure that it was place held in the record, but wanted to be sure that it was because there is a maintenance and a monitoring obligation, as well as fencing, signage, and some other requirements that would ordinarily be imposed at preliminary plat and be reflected on the final plat. So I just wanted to make sure that those recommendations were carried forward to ensure that the habitat was protected.
Perfect. Thank you for that. Before we're done, we'll go to staff and have them let us know if they want more time to review your revisions to the conditions or how we'll handle that. One thing that I meant to ask about, and potentially it was Mr. Hatton who was going to speak to it, there's a private road tract off the end of this southern cul-de-sac that stubs to 30-foot tract C. I'm just curious about the purpose of that tract.
So that, this is Steve Hatton.
Just to provide access to 54 and 55?
Well, a little bit. The primary motivator for that tract was the SEPA appeal on the parcel just west of this piece, and they wanted utility service. When you look at the original layout in attachment G, there were lots there, and rather than try and extend utilities and easements on individual lots, mm-hmm. we just reconfigured the lots, created a private road that would serve them. But the point of it is to create the utility corridor to get water and sewer service to the, it's a single one single family home on the labeled parcel A of BLA. Something. Anyway, that's just there to get water and sewer stubs to that people so they can build a house, and it made more sense to reorient the lots so it created a tract.
Great. Thank you for that clarification. That was that one open file folder I had from your earlier testimony.
Okay.
I think that's it. I don't have other questions for the applicant witnesses at this time. Anything else, Ms. Burgess, you want to bring to my attention before we inquire about public comment?
No, thank you. Examiner Rice, appreciate it.
Great. Ms. Katie, can you help me find out, do we have members of the public who'd like to provide testimony?
We do have three members of the public in attendance. If you'd like to testify, please go ahead and use the raise your hand option, which should be at the bottom of your screen by the mute button.
And if the Samsung, they're not calling, right? Because that would be a phone number if they were calling.
Yep.
Okay.
And just in case, that'd be *9 to raise your hand on a telephone.
So again, we're inviting public comment now. If anybody who's in the meeting would like to provide public comment, we are asking you to please use the raise your hand feature. And on my screen, that's in the toolbar at the bottom of the page. Or if you're calling *9. We aren't having any immediate takers.
Yeah, still no one.
Okay, so if nobody in the meeting wants to testify, we can't make them, then we will move on. Last call, if you'd like to testify, please raise your hand at this time. Nope. Okay. Thanks. Anyway, there is no public comment. So normally we would have responses now. We don't have any comments to respond to. Let me go to Mr. Burris. I know you received Exhibit 6 with its commentary and its proposed revised conditions just today. I don't know if you've had a chance to look at them, or, sir, if you would like to make arrangements to have time to submit post-hearing written responses to Exhibit 6.
I would like the opportunity to get post-hearing comments.
How soon do you think that could be conducted?
2 days.
Great. It went in that post-hearing review of those conditions, sir, would you be asking Ms. Peebles and Mr. Saint to review any that touch their departments and get their input in that same 2-day timeframe?
Yes, I would, but I'm reflecting on my return comments. I would please
need to check with them on their time. Yeah. I don't know if any of them relate to your conditions or not. Ms. Peebles, is 2 days enough time for you to check and respond?
I did briefly review Exhibit 6, and I don't believe anything pertains to environmental health. Therefore, I don't believe it's necessary to add comments.
Great. Mr. Saint, did you have a chance to Do you know if any of them relate to your department's review?
I also reviewed them. I have no issues with the revisions.
Okay. Well, I'm going to note that. And then, Mr. Burris, then your request is for 2 days to submit responses in writing. Great. Thank you for that. Anything else anybody on, in the county staff wants to bring to my attention at this time? No. Okay. And let's go to the applicants. I assume the applicants are going to would like an opportunity to review and comment on any comments submitted by Mr. Burris in response to the requested revisions. Is 2 days adequate for that, Ms. Burgess?
We will go as fast as is necessary to get this project to a conclusion.
So let's do this. I'm going to simply fold in these post-hearing review of requested revisions and then response to review into the time frame that's established for post-hearing public comment. So in doing so, it only postpones the potential decision date by 2 days, and it's going to be within the time frame that would have applied if there is any post-hearing written public comment. I hope that was English and that you understood what I was saying, but I can explain it better now when I tell you the schedule.
That's fine. And I really believe Monday's a holiday.
Yes.
Right. So that gets excluded. So yeah.
Right. It does.
Review the schedule and I'm sure we'll be fine with it. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. I am excluding holiday. So it is included in my schedule here. So what we'll do is, again, the folks who are in the meeting who did not testify, unless you're having technology problems, you're not invited to submit post-hearing comments. This post-hearing public comment opportunity is for people who had technology reasons they could not participate. Just want to put that out there. If anyone tried to participate and had technology reasons they could not, the record is held open 2 business days for public comment from such people who had technology problems. That means the record is held open through February 15 for post-hearing public comments, and Mr. Burris's written responses to the requested revisions to the recommended conditions would also be due February 15th. Then, if we did get post-hearing public comments, staff and applicants have 2 business days to respond. That means your responses are due February 20th. That is also when the applicant's final response to Mr. Burris's comments on the requested revisions to conditions is due. So everything is due by February the 20th. There is a 10 business day decision issuance deadline, which then falls on March the 5th. That is our post-hearing schedule. Other than those items, we did not, and I will number those items when they come in, give them, so I'm not gonna pre-number those. So Mr. Burris's response, the applicant's final comments and response. Those are the 2 items the record is held open for, in addition to potential post-hearing public comment from people with technology issues and responses thereto. Nothing else has been invited. And all of that should be submitted to me by email via Ms. Katie, by the 20th or the morning of the 21st, the 10 business day decision issuance deadline is March 5. That concludes our hearing. I thank you all for your persistence and perseverance in this project. I look forward to issuing you this interesting decision. Everybody take good care. Stay well. We're adjourned.